welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Welcome to Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast. I am here with Lindsay Cameron, and you are the author of No One Needs to Know, which is a delicious thriller set on the Upper East Side of New York City.
It is, yes. First of all, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yes, I'm the author of No One Needs to Know, and No One Needs to Know is set on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And the residents there all really love to use this anonymous neighborhood forum called Urban Myth. And Urban Myth is a place where they can go and talk about neighborhood gossip and tell secrets that they've always been keeping inside, or just unburden their souls with some confession. And they can do this because the whole thing is anonymous. But when Urban Myth is hacked and the true identities of the people behind the posts become public, the neighborhood is rocked and people will do anything to keep their secrets hidden.
So first of all, I love that it's set on the Upper East Side. Why was that your choice?
I actually live on the Upper East Side, and it is a great neighborhood.
No. Are we giving your secrets away now?
No.
Good.
I live in this neighborhood, and there are all kinds of people in this neighborhood. But what it's known for is this micro community of the uber wealthy. And it really is just a micro community on the Upper East Side, but that is what the neighborhood is known for. And I wanted to focus on that element because I think, obviously, it's a group of people that the majority of us will never, you know, be a part of. But it's also a group of people that I think we're really fascinated with, maybe because they do tend to be a secretive group of people. And a lot of times, a lot of family drama comes from that group of people, as we can see from the news, with a lot of famous families. So I thought that that would be a really good spot for a novel that is really based around secrets.
So my next thing I wanted to ask you before we talk a little bit about Poppy, Heather, and Nora, is Urban Myth in general, is that based on something real? I know that there are so many mom groups on all the social media sites. I personally avoid them like the plague, for lack of a better phrase. You know, I have friends who are like, oh, did you see what so-and-so? I'm like, no, I didn't. And they're like, well, are you on it? And I'm like, no, I'm not. And they're like, well, why not? And I'm like, because I don't want to know.
And you're probably better off for that.
No one needs to know.
Yes, exactly.
Tell us a little bit about Urban Myth.
Okay, so Urban Myth actually is based off of an anonymous board that I came across. When I was a new mother and I went to one of these new mom meetups, one of the other mothers said, have you heard of this user board for new moms? It's anonymous. And so I was like, oh, that's interesting. She said, it's very entertaining. And I was thinking, why would something with new moms on a message board be entertaining? So I went on and I was kind of expecting, you know, to see people crowdsourcing parenting issues that they're too embarrassed to talk to their parents. And there was some of that. But what there also was a lot of was people using it as a confessional. They had something that they wanted to get off their chest. This was how they were going to just put it out there in the world. And I was just so fascinated that people needed something like that to put their secrets or confessions out in the world. And I was also so interested in the fact that they just assumed that that what they would write would stay anonymous.
Yeah, I think that's one thing about social media in general that always kind of amazes me is that, you know, whether or not people realize they're not anonymous 100%, or whether they think they are, or whether they think it's okay, I'm a public figure, but on social media, so I can say whatever I want. It's like nobody realizes that there is weight to what you say and what you do and what you ask for, and that people aren't going to be able to somehow trace it back. And then it comes out and people are like, but I thought, and it's like, you thought what? So anyway, so, you know, it was interesting. So you have these three women, Nora, Heather, and Poppy. They all have kids around the same age, which is eighth grade, I believe.
Yes.
Eighth grade is a really good age to kind of mirror what they're going through, because I feel like eighth grade is that point in middle school where it's sort of on. You know, like the kids are not quite high school age, and especially like in an affluent community like Heather, Poppy, and Nora's, everything is like older. So, you know, you have the mom drama, and then they're involved in their kid drama. So that was pretty clever.
Oh, good. Yeah, I do find eighth grade, you know, they're kind of on the precipice of high school, and parents who are particularly competitive start thinking, well, I mean, parents who are particularly competitive start thinking about it at birth, but they also in eighth grade really start to look towards college. And kids start to, you know, mature and make some bad decisions and try different things. So it's a interesting age to have the kids at.
So in the beginning, one of the moms is trying to get her daughter into like this really like interesting exclusive club. Is that a real thing?
That is a real thing. We are dishing secrets today.
Because, you know, I could have done the research after reading the book, but I just wanted to ask you because it just blew my mind.
So in Manhattan, there's a lot of these, you know, private dinner clubs, and they are definitely like a throwback to old Manhattan, but they're still around. And these private dinner clubs are generally for adults, but each one of them will have a teen night, like whether it's a teen dinner, it generally tends to be a teen dance. And I thought that it would be such a great spot for something controversial to happen, because they are very private. They're private members clubs. Some of them will collect phones because they don't want, they want the members to feel comfortable is their reasons, but I think they also don't want things out there. So I thought it would be a interesting place for some drama to happen.
So talk about Poppy, Heather, and Nora, and just how these three women are very different, how their home lives and their marriages are different, and why they were sort of like the backbone of the drama in the story.
Well, when I was thinking of these characters, I had kind of an idea of three different types of women that would be in this type of society. And Poppy is the one who she doesn't question her place in this world. She was born into wealth. She married into wealth. She's not insecure about her position, and she considers herself, you know, top of the heap and is secure with that. On the other side of the coin is Heather, and I wanted Heather kind of to be hanging on the bottom rung of this world and desperately trying to scrape her way up. And, you know, saving her money for this private school tuition, because she's sure that getting her daughter into an Ivy is one way that she can ascend this ladder. But there's a desperate striver nature about Heather. And with Nora, I wanted somebody who had kind of earned her spot in this world. She was a good student. She got a very well-paying job, so she can live in the same types of apartments as the people in this kind of elite group, but she very much considers herself an outsider, and she's not the type of person who is striving to be an insider either. She's, you know, got her own stuff going on. And so that's where the three women started, and I had fun kind of figuring out from there how their marriages would be, what their secrets would be.
Yeah, actually, that was all very interesting. And it was interesting kind of to see, you know, what their marriages would be. I think, you know, man, Poppy's marriage. I don't want to give too much away, but I was reading, like when I was reading that, I was like, oh man, okay. But you can kind of say that about all of them. But you know, with Nora in general, I think, I mean, personally for me, she was probably the more relatable, you know, because she was the one who she kind of did the right things to get where she was, and she wanted the best for her kids, and she wanted the best out of everything, and she landed herself in this war zone by doing the right things, not realizing what she was getting into. And then, you know, like you have Poppy and Heather, who have these like teeth. I mean, it was really, again, you know, the pieces really did fit together really nicely. So, I mean, did you plot everything out, and all the twists and turns really in a detailed way? Or were you like, okay, I want this to happen and this to happen, and things just kind of spun into existence?
I really only had a very loose outline. That's how I write my books. I wish I was more of a detailed plotter. I think the writing would happen faster.
No, you did a really good job. I think that, like, you know, it's so funny because, like, people, like, there's this that term plotter and pantser, and I'm kind of like getting like annoyed by pantser because I don't know why that term annoys me. No offense to pantsers out there. I think you're great, and I think you're great. But what I was going to say is that, you know, I think that that's great because everything does, you know, and I'm trying to avoid spoilers here, but this is a really juicy story, and everything really does kind of weave together so nicely. And it amazes me when I talk to authors who do write these thrillers, and they're like, yeah, no, things just kind of clicked. But it also, you know, plotters also amaze me too, because there's a lot has to go into making the meat of especially a thriller, something that's going to kind of keep you guessing, keep you looking around the corner, figuring out what's going to happen to the characters.
Yeah, I am always amazed by plotters because I don't know how they do that without really getting into their characters, you know? When I start, I have how I want the book to start. I have the general idea of the characters and how I know how I want the book to end. And then it kind of from there it evolves over several drafts. That's probably the problem with being not a detailed plotter, is it is several drafts that you know, you kind of, as you're towards the end of one draft, you figure out something that you want to put in, and you're like, oh, well, now in the next draft, I've got to go back and change three or four things. So, in my mind, it's probably a longer process, the pantser process, but it's just the way I do it. I can't picture being able to plot out all those details all at one time because sometimes when you're working through a draft, you realize you've been too heavy-handed with like the foreshadowing or the hints, and this is very easily guessable. And you kind of eliminate that part, but that might change something else. So it's kind of almost always a work in progress that eventually comes together.
Are you a thriller reader yourself?
I am a thriller reader. I'm a late in life thriller reader. I actually, my very first novel, it was called Big Law, and that was women's fiction. And when I was writing that, my agent at the time said, I want you to pace it a little bit more like a thriller. And I didn't read thrillers at the time. And so I went to the library, got a bunch of thrillers, studied them all, and loved how they were paced, that kind of unputdownable quality, the, you know, chapter cliffhangers. And when I was reading those, I was just like, I have to write my next book. I'm switching genres. I love this genre. So that was, I mean, 15 years ago. Time is fluid now. But I've been reading thrillers for a while now, and now this is the genre that I love.
So is your next book going to be a thriller?
Yes. I don't need to talk about too much about work in progress because, as I said, they change quite a
That's
bit.
all right.
But it's a thriller, what I'm working on.
So of all the characters in No One Needs to Know, do you have a favorite? Do you have one that you, I mean, even if it's like somebody you hate, which I always find interesting because a lot of these characters are not very likable,
Yes,
but they're fun to read, which is a good thing in thrillers. Do you have one that like you really just really enjoyed writing?
Yes. So, but probably my favorite character as a person is probably Nora. She was kind of a moral lighthouse, and she was, trying to do the right thing within the realm of what she could figure out was best for her daughter. But my favorite to write was Poppy, because I loved, like, just kind of, as you said, the teeth that she has. And that was fun to write, like, her sassiness. And it's a completely different personality than my own, which is always fun. So
I wouldn't want to meet Poppy. I wouldn't want to
no.
know Poppy, but I certainly
Well,
like to read Poppy.
that's just it. That's what I love. People talk about the unlikable character. I love writing unlikable characters, and I love reading unlikable characters. They're far off of what you are, what I am, but I love to read from their point of view. And in terms of the writing, when you're writing an unlikable character, what you try and do is have the reader understand why they are the way they are. They don't necessarily have to want to hang out with them, but there is some level of their background that you're like, oh, that's why you kind of, went off the rails and are an unpleasant person.
Do you have a favorite unlikable character that you have read outside of your own books?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably, and this is interesting because people don't usually call male characters unlikable. I always find female characters are held up to this likability.
Well, yeah, and why is that? Why can't the male character
I
be?
don't know, because my answer is going to be Joe Goldberg from the You series.
You and
Yeah.
yes, it's funny you say that because we have spoken to Caroline Kepnes on here, and we've like I think both times we've asked her, we're like, why are people so forgiving of Joe? Why are people so into him? She's always like, I
Yes.
get it. Like she writes him, and I remember when you first started becoming popular, and like all of these memes online of people being like, oh yeah, Joe obsess over me, and I'm like, why? And we're like, we asked her, we're like, do you get it? And she's just like, no.
Yes, no. I mean, and I certainly am not the point of those memes, but I find she just writes him so well with like the pop culture references, and he just is extremely unlikable. He's out there killing people. But I always enjoy those books, and that is a great unlikable character. But people don't usually call Joe Goldberg unlikable. Specifically, I think because he's a male character. I do think that female characters, when you read reviews, it is like this character isn't likable, but the men are not held up to that same standard, which is, in books and probably in life too.
It's interesting, and I wonder how much of that is like it is sort of set in a time period, because I think about like I mean one of my talk about unlikable characters. A lot of the characters I find unlikable are male, and especially like when you talk about like classic literature, I am a huge fan of The Great Gatsby, but I feel like so many characters, male and female, in that book, especially Tom Buchanan, and in some ways, even though I know Gatsby is like the romantic hero, there are unlikable qualities about him too. He's much better than Tom Buchanan, but looking back on it, I'm like, you're also kind of fitting somebody into what you want, like almost like an earlier Joe, like he holds Daisy to this standard and she can't have a child or have done anything wrong. Like there are unlikable male characters throughout literature. I mean, like, what is it? Hemingway, I think, is full of unlikable male characters, but it is very interesting because you do bring up a good point, and especially, with this big boom of thrillers, and I became a thriller reader before the pandemic. But during the pandemic, I just started devouring thrillers and horror, which are chock full of unlikable characters. And yes, you're right. It is almost always the female character that when you're reading these reviews, people are like, oh, she was so unlikable.
Yeah, definitely. And usually, the female character who is unlikable, she's usually showing male tendencies like, unbridled ambition or, addiction, drinking too much. It's like when the female character is showing male qualities, the qualities that aren't traditionally feminine, then she's unlikable,
Or she sleeps around, which,
Well, no,
if
I
you were
sleeps around. It's
thinking
like
about, yeah, thinking about, no one needs to know. I mean, there are multiple affairs that happen, but it does always seem like, the women are always the ones who are dirt. The guys, like, well, he is a wealthy guy. Like, this is what wealthy guys do. And like with the women, it's like, oh, you, how could you?
It's true, exactly. And they're just held up to a different standard. And as I said, I think that's probably life too. So, but you're absolutely right. A lot of those classics have very unlikable characters, but that isn't something that people really talk about because they don't usually refer to men as unlikable. Even though, as you said, like a lot of their personality traits are not pleasant.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me. No One Needs to Know is a super thriller. I think people are really going to like it. As a New Yorker, it's always fun to read about places I know. So,
Yes.
check it out. I guess the one last thing I have to ask you is, and like you don't have to give specifics, but like how wild were some of those confessionals?
Oh, it, on the real one?
Yes.
Actually, like very wild. Like people were kind of confessing to like some white collar crimes. There was definitely like affairs confessions. And you don't know, like, were these real people? Were they trolls? But I was just like very interested how crazy it got. Like all on this like new mom's message board, where you think you're going to be reading about like strollers or something. And
I know.
it
Mom's
got,
award.
yes, it got very wild. And as that woman said, it got very entertaining.
Well, thank you again, Lindsay Cameron. Pick up No One Needs to Know at your library, at your bookstore, at wherever you get your books. But definitely check out your library because I'm a librarian and I have to say that. And we're recording this on National Library Week. Dig your teeth into this one. So once again, this was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. Our guest today was
Lindsay Cameron, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. We are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.